ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ಭಾಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ಭಾಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ
ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀಮಾಧಿ ಸೇವಾ ಇಂಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀಮಾಧಿ ಸೇವಾ ಇಂಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಾರಾ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಅನಂತ ಕೋತಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದ ಕಿ ಇಸ್ಕೋಂ ಫೌಂದರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಶಿಮಂ ಭಾಗವತಂಕಿ ನಿತಾಯಿ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬೋ ದೇವೋತಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬೋ ದೇವೋತಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬೋ ದೇವೋತಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಶಿಶಿ ಗುರು ವಂಶಿ ಗೌರಂಗ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ವಿ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಶ್ರೀಮನ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕಂತೋ 9 ಎಂಟೈಟಲ್ಡ್ ಲಿಬರೇಷನ್ ವಿ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಕನ್ಕ್ಲೂಡ್ ಟುಡೇ ದ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಆಫ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 2 ವಿಚ್ ಇಸ್ ಎಂಟೈಟಲ್ಡ್ ದ ಡೈನಸ್ಟಿ ಆಫ್ ದ ಸನ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಮನು And we start the next chapter, chapter 3, which is entitled The Marriage of Sukanya and Chavanamuni. So I read, it's a lot of reading. I'm going to read starting with text 29 of the chapter 2, and then all the way to the conclusion of the chapter, and then we start a new chapter all the way to text number 9, and that we chant together. So I'm just going to read the translations. Text number 29. Maruta's son was Dhamma. Dhamma's son was Rajyavardhana. Rajyavardhana's son was Sudriti, and his son was Nara. Text number 30. The son of Nara was Kevala, and his son was Dunduman, whose son was Vegavan. Vegavan's son was Buddha, and Buddha's son was Trinabindu, who became the king of this earth. The best of the Apsaras, the highly qualified girl named Alambusha, accepted the similar qualified Trinabindu as her husband. She gave birth to a few sons and a daughter known as Ilavila. After the great saint Vishrava, the master of mystic yoga, received absolute knowledge from his father, he begot in the womb of Ilavila the greatly celebrated son known as Kuvera, the giver of money. Trinabindu had three sons named Vishala, Sunyabandhu, and Dumraketu. Among these three, Vishala created a dynasty and constructed a palace called Vaishali. The son of Vishala was known as Hemachandra. His son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama, whose sons were Devaya and Krishashwa. Text 35 to 36, the last verses of this chapter, chapter 2. The son of Krishava was Somadatta, who performed Asomeda sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post as a resident on the planet to which great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janamejaya. All these kings appearing in the dynasty of Vishala properly maintained the celebrated position of King Trinabindu. And thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the 9th canto, 2nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of the Sons of Manu. Now next, chapter 3, The Marriage of Sukanya and Chyavanamuni. Text number 1. Sri Shukadev Goswami continue, O King, Sariyati, the son of Manu, was a ruler, Sariyati, another son of Manu, was a ruler completely aware of Vedic knowledge. He gave instructions about the functions for the second day of the Yajna to be performed by the descendants of Angira. Text number 2. Sariyati had a beautiful lotus-eyed daughter named Sukanya, with whom he went to the forest to see the ashram of Chyavanamuni. Text number 3. While that Sukanya, surrounded by her friends, was collecting various types of fruits from the trees in the forest, she saw within the hole of an earthworm two things glowing like luminaries. Text number 4. as if induced by providence, the girl ignorantly pierced those two glowworms with a thorn, and when they were pierced, blood began to ooze out of them. Text number 5. Thereupon, all the soldiers of Sariati were immediately obstructed from passing urine and stool. Upon perceiving this, Sariati spoke to his associates in surprise. Text number 6. How strange it is that one of us has attempted to do something wrong to Chavanamuni, the son of Bhrigu. It certainly appears that someone among us has polluted this ashram. Text number 7. Being very much afraid, the girl Sukanya said to her father, "I have done something wrong, for I have ignorantly pierced those two luminous substances from the thorn with a thorn." Text number 8. After hearing this statement by his daughter, King Sariati was very much afraid. In various ways, he tried to appease Chavanamuni, for it was he who sat within the hole of the earthworm. Text number 9, and that we read together. Tat abhi prajan agyaya pradadu hitaram munehe krichan muktastan amritya puram prajat samahitaha tat abhi prajan agyaya pradadu hitaram munehe krichan muktastan amantriya puram prajat samahitaha tat abhi prajan agyaya pradaddu hitaram munehe krichan muktastan amantriya puram prajat samahitaha. Please chant. Thank you. tat of Shravana Muni abhiprayam the purpose agyaya understanding pradat deliberate duhitaram his daughter munehe unto Chavana Muni krichat with great difficulty muktaha release tam the Muni amantriya taking permission puram to his own place prajat went away samahitaha being very contemplative. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. King Saryati, being contemplative and thus understanding Shravana Muni's purpose, gave his daughter in charity to the sage. Thus released from danger with great difficulty, he took permission from Shravana Muni and returned home. Purport. The king, after hearing the statements of his daughter, certainly told the great sage Shravana Muni everything about how his daughter had ignorantly committed such an offense. The Muni, however, inquired from the king whether the daughter was married. In this way, the king, understanding the purpose of the great sage Shravana Muni, tat abhiprajan agyaya, immediately gave the Muni his daughter in charity and escaped the danger of being cursed. Thus, with the permission of the great sage, the king returned home. Om Agyana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaja Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shimate Roma Paswami Tinamne Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satavine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So we continue the narration by Srila Sukadev Goswami about this great dynasty coming from the sun god. The glories of so many personalities. There's a list of so many personalities that are there. Some of them are highlighted as great, great saintly kings, some as powerful brahmanas, and so far, since he started this narration, since the question by Parikshit Maharaj about tell me more about this dynasty, the sons of Swayambhuva Manu, and we're talking about here the great Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the scripture, the Shastra, that give us the great example of the perfect examples of personalities who represent the highest elevated position that any living entity in this material world can obtain. These are the stories of the great devotees of the Lord. Those who actually, because we right in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the statement was given that this scripture does not deal with anything that is materially contaminated. That what we're talking here is the principles of dharma that are the highest principle of dharma, the param dharma. This the dharma that is basically explained in most of the Vedas, basically over we'll say, you know, the vast Vedas mostly explains about this dharma that is mixed or contaminated by material motivations. But this Bhagavatam absolutely kicked out that dharma projito kaitava atra, that dharma that is motivated by any material thing is kicked out. So the only thing that is prepared or that is explained in this great Srimad Bhagavatam are the highest conceptions of the absolute truth, the highest conception of duty dharma. And this is duty dharma dharma. So this param dharma sabai punsam paro dharma yato bhaktir adokshaye, devotional service to the personality of Godhead. And in the Bhagavatam also it says that one who achieved this possession of bhakti, this unalloyed devotional service, devoid of all motivations, ahaitukiya pratiyata, that position is so powerful that one who is in that position have no needs to perform any other, he have no duties to perform, because that as the highest duty automatically covers everything. So the pure devotee or those who are in that position of unalloyed devotion, they have no duties to perform in this world. So duties to family, duties to that are to their in society, to our parents, you know, those are automatically taken care. The highest or all the result of all the different dharmas or duties that are there prescribed in the scriptures, in the Vedic scriptures, are automatically obtained by the performance of unalloyed devotional service. However, it is explained that to be able to obtain that benediction, to be completely free from the duties that we have to do, that are prescribed to us, is the benediction is according to the level of consciousness of bhakti that we have. So therefore, we hear when Krishna, the principle is taught, that's basically the theme of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Krishna tells Arjuna that he have to perform his duty as a kshatriya. But he gave the principle how to perform your duties as a kshatriya. He discouraged Arjuna to abandon his duties and engage in the life of an ascetic, of a renunciant, to renounce, to become a karma sannyas, to renounce any type of duties, and simply absorb himself in renunciation and meditation. In absorb, you know. So Krishna discouraged Arjuna of that. He gave the principle of, you know, you perform your duty tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. How has it gone, that verse? Anyone? That while performing your duty, while performing your work, you meditate upon me. Your mind should be fixed on me. So we become trained to do that, but the principle is, Krishna also explained this to Uddhava in the 11th canto. He says that as long as one is not detached from fruitive activities and material enjoyment, as long as one has no faith in devotion to Krishna, beginning with the process of hearing and chanting his glories, one has to act according to the religious principles of karma or vanashram. So, as long as we have attachments, as long as we have desires, then renunciation of karma, of work, of duties, is not prescribed. One have to then follow the process of performing one's duty under the instructions and the guidance of a spiritual master, and enter into, while performing one's duties, one carry out the process of purification, starting with hearing and chanting. So this process of purification is given by the spiritual master. So thus we have, you know, we go to bhajana kriya, and then we go to anartha nivritti. The spiritual master gives us the means to actually become free from all those desires and attachments. And Krishna also tells Uddhava something very important. And I'm just giving the preamble of what I like to highlight on this series of verses. Krishna tells Uddhava that being fixed in the position for which one... All right, quiet. You got that? No, you didn't get that. Okay, I'll read it again. The telephone didn't get that. He said, being fixed in the position for which one is qualified is virtuous. Being fixed in the position for which one is qualified is virtuous. The opposite, accepting a position for which one is unqualified, is irresponsible and considered impious. This is the definite conclusion. So, therefore, we need proper guidance to understand what our adhikari is, our qualification is. And thus, you know, we can be properly situated. Once we understand our adhikari, our spiritual master tells us, it is explained that he gave us our swadharma. What is our duties? According to your adhikari, or our adhikari. And then, when we're fixed and situated in that, that is a virtuous position. That is a progressive. We can actually elevate ourselves. However, by concoction or by whimsicality, Prabhupada, in the purport of that verse, it's in the second chapter when he breaks down swadharma, that he explains that if we become whimsical and then we accept a position that is not our adhikari, then that causes a lot of problems. I mean, it can basically destroy our capacity to elevate ourselves in Krishna consciousness. So, and bringing it to the verse today, one may ask oneself, you know, here in these great narrations, we're hearing, it's a little puzzling. Looks like so many things in the Bhagavatam, you know, it's like, okay, why? I mean, we're seeing a very old sage, Shravana Muni. It is explained that he was not only very old, but he was diseased. He was infirm. He was, you know, like he's. You can see he because he was an ascetic. He was very thin, and you can see the veins, you know, of his body very clearly. And he, you know, he was white hair and, you know, very, very old and infirm. So you have this very old ascetic becoming sort of interested, you know, in having this very beautiful, qualified princess. So one say, wait a minute, you know, this doesn't sound, I mean, doesn't sound so great. What is a very, very old Muni interested in a, you know, very, very young, beautiful princess? It's a little strange. And then the narration of a young princess just, you know, with her friends, just going in the forest, picking things and there, and then doing, you know, being curious about this. Oh, two holes, you know, like that. Okay, we've been hearing about the great Swayambhuva Manu, who is, you know, the ruler of this particular, you know, period in the universe. And, you know, and the dynasty of great kings. And then we have this great king Sariati, who is explained, you know, is a full, he have full knowledge of the Vedas. You know, maybe let's hear about the king, but, you know, about the young girl, you know, like, you know, like doing, being a little silly, you know, or careless, you know, well, not silly, but careless, like a young person playing in the forest with her friends and then, you know, being curious about the things that they see. And then we're going to hear more about what's so special about this girl. What's so special that she became an example to be given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, to make it in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you have to be an extremely, you know, really up there personality. I mean, this is the real celebrity, you know, book. This is universal celebrity. You know, there are people that became proud when they make it in Time magazine. The man of the year, you know. So, you know, they put it in the wall like that. The man of the year in this tiny planet in Kali Yuga. You know, we're talking about universal history. And this narration of this girl, who appears to be frivolous, doing things, you know, like that. And even then, not having the sense, making this huge mistake of offending this very, very all-powerful sage. How'd she make it here? So there's something very special about this princess. And as we're going to hear the narration, this Sukanya princess is a great example of a Vedic woman. There's many examples that are given in Srimad Bhagavatam, and this princess is one of them. How, by the power of chastity, she is glorified universally. And it is explained that by the power of chastity, the women obtain mystic powers. And when it's done, actually, in other words, the principle of acting dutifully according to one's position, one actually acquires ascetic powers. And not only that, but just as for a woman to practice, is explained in the scriptures, by the practice of this chastity, they become as powerful, and sometimes even more powerful than a man performing austerities and asceticism. Sometimes it is described. And there's a very wonderful story given in the Nrisimha Purana of the story of this great saintly chaste lady who have very special powers, and the story of a very powerful brahmachari who also had very special powers. So the two of them have an interaction, and is a very important lesson. One is that when you perform your duties for the pleasure of when you are protected by performing your duties for the pleasure of Krishna, then the result is a very clear understanding of one's position and, in other words, how we should perform our duties in order to properly elevate ourselves. The result is Krishna consciousness, basically, putting in short. When one's duties and performance of austerities are not properly situated in devotion, but are more for the purpose of just performing the duties like that, like a material, you know, like something that we're supposed to do, and we focus on that, and there is not much understanding or guidance in the principle of devotion, the result is pride. It is explained that the result of piety, when it's not guided by devotion, is pride. And there's something with pride that always leads to anger. So pride leads to anger, and then when anger enters into the picture, then you're going down. So it's a process that is not progressive, but it's regressive. One is not connected to devotion. So this story highlights that. There was one, a very righteous Brahmana. His name was Kashyapa. It's not the Kashyapa Muni of the Bhagavatam, but this is different. And this was a very, very pious Brahmana. He was master in all the scriptures, and he performed so many, he knew how to perform sacrifices, and he was very disciplined in performing his duty, and he was worshipping the personality of Godhead in the form of Lord Nrisingadev. So he would perform yagyas and sacrifices and devotion, and with great devotion to Lord Nrisingadev every morning, you know, do his regular duties like that. He was also very careful how he dealt with devotees, with brahmanas. So he was a pakka devotee, very, very good, very, very elevated. And he had a wife, the name of the wife was Savitri, and his wife Savitri was equally qualified. She was honored for her virtue and her chastity. And because of the life that she had of with great devotion and attention serving her qualified husband, she was endowed with powers. And the power that she had was she was able to know things beyond the senses. In other words, she can see future, she was like a sort of omniscient in some way, you know, like that. In another part of the land, there was another very, very qualified Brahmana. His name was Jagya Sharman. And he did have also a wife whose name was Rohini. Equally qualified, and both of them high character. And they both have a son, and the son was named Deva Sharman. So the father was Yagya Sharman, the son was Deva Sharman. And the son was by his father, Yagya Sharman, the Brahmana. He was instructed in all the different aspects of Brahminical culture. He was trained in the scriptures, in the Vedas, and very soon this young boy became, he mastered the Vedas. He learned all the yagyas, he learned all the Brahminical activities and duties. And when he came to age, he was given by the father the Brahminical initiation. And but soon after, the father died. And both Deva Sharman and Rohini, Mataji, they were, you know, stricken with grief. So Deva Sharman decided he will go into the forest and perform austerities. And thus, traveling all over the world, performing austerities, Deva Sharman became renowned as a great ascetic. His fame actually rose, and he will wander all over the world simply begging, surviving in alms, and chanting Vedic mantras and performing sacrifice. So very soon his fame was accepted all over the place. And he so became known as a great brahmachari, powerful brahmachari. And however, as his fame grew, on the other hand, his mother, having lost her husband and not having a son, the son also became this famous ascetic, but she was left alone. The mother became poverty-stricken and she was suffering greatly because she didn't have any means of someone to protect her or maintain her in her old age. So she was neglected and left alone, basically, to suffer her situation. So Deva Sharma, meanwhile, one time, he came to the bank of this river and he took bath, and then he sat in meditation and put his clothes to dry. And then all of a sudden came two birds, a crow and a stork. And they grabbed the clothes and they started to fly. When Deva Sharma saw these two birds doing that, he became very upset, very angry. And he started to curse and say horrible things to this bird. Bleep, 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 bird, bleep, bleep, you know, like that. So then the birds, you know, they got sort of scared and let go the clothes, but they did pass two on the clothes. Deva Sharma became enraged, and just by looking at the birds, the birds just burned into flames and went in, you know, became ashes. The two birds. He killed the two birds just by angrily looking at them. He was surprised. He said, whoa! He got Superman type of powers, you know, that type of vision, you know. So he was, you know, I'm actually very powerful. You know, I can, now he became something more. He's a mystic, you know, powerful personality, not just famous, but now he has powers, mystic powers. So became very proud about this. So as he walked, you know, he came into this village where the saintly Kashyapa and Savitri were living. And then he came to the hut of this couple, to beg alms. But at the moment that he came to the door to beg alms, Chaste Savitri Mataji was serving her husband his meal. So, because she was so chaste in serving the husband, then she didn't stand up and attend to this ascetic sage waiting outside for alms. So only after the husband finished his meal and after she washed, you know, her hands and feet, then she stand up and went to the door to attend to the ascetic. Meanwhile, Deva Sharman, his eyes started to be, he was really angry for having been kept waiting all this time. His eyes were red already, and he was ready to burn. However, powerful saintly Savitri look at him and say, "Oh, angry ascetic, I'm not like the birds that you burn and you kill. So calm down." And he was taken aback. And he was thinking, "Oh, how did she know?" So anyway, something went, and then she said, "Calm down, I will bring some alms," and gave him some alms. So as he went away, he was starting to be puzzled. He's starting to ask himself, what happened? How did she know? So he went back and he asked her, "So oh, virtuous lady, how do you know what kind of mystic powers you have that you're able to know what happened?" And then she gave this very, very important advice to this Devashrama. He says that she acquired her powers because of serving her husband day and night. And then because she acted with full love and devotion to this very qualified husband who was a great devotee of the Lord, and her life was completely focused onto that, she acquired these powers. However, as far as himself, just because of neglecting his duties, because he, for the sake of achieving things, doing things for himself, according to the position that he think he had, he neglected his mother, who he was indebted to, because it was the powers that you have are because of your father, because of the instructions that your father gave you. And now you basically are allowing your mother to be in such a wretched situation that not only that shows ungratitude, because here's the person who nourished you, here's the person who actually brought you up, and now you just leaving her to die alone. So the result of that neglect of duty for a person that is not Krishna consciousness is simply, it becomes pride. And pride has simply degraded you into an angry person. And that anger allows you to kill these two innocent birds. Now, not only you are cursed by the sins of abandoning your mother, but also for the sins of killing these two birds. So she then went on to advise this Brahmana what to do. I mean, Deva Sharman was pious enough to ask, okay, then what should I do? And she explains, then you go back to your village, take care of your mother, and there will be a girl a qualified girl, that once you're there performing your duties, she will be married to you, and then you will have a son, and you carry on your duties while worshipping Lord Srinagadev, and when your wife die, then you take Tridandi Sannyas and achieve perfection. So he did that, and his life was successful, this Deva Sharman. So in conclusion, then the principle of accepting one's duties on the direction of a pure devotee, of an elevated devotee, is a virtuous place for any one of us to be. If we try to concoct or follow according with not having that type of guidance, then the result is downwards. So humility, tolerance, all the qualities that are described, the qualities of a devotee, are achieved as we follow this virtuous path. The contrary becomes when we're not following that path. So, and the first thing that comes is pride. Pride in doing pious things. The pride that comes by studying the Vedas, the pride that comes by performing spiritual activities, or, you know, activities that are prescribed in the scriptures. So, which are, you know, they're transcendental activities, the chanting of mantras, the performance of sacrifices. The result will be pride. And pride, with no doubt, in no time, becomes anger. And then anger is what happens when you're angry. Then you commit offenses. You commit offenses to others, and that's, in a way, it's a path downwards. So we hear more about this extremely qualified princess, Sukanya, more about, you know, in the next several verses. It's very instructive. Any comment or questions? Jai Baladev. Keep it concise, Baladev.
I'll try to. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for your class. You were mentioning that to make it in the Bhagavatam, you have to be a great soul. And you were also mentioning she was great because of her chastity. I don't want to give it away, but that's not really my question. But in this pastime, we hear that her father falsely accused her of being unchaste. And the reason I appreciate the general pastimes is that just because she, even if she wasn't unchaste, that doesn't mean she wasn't great, because everyone makes mistakes. And we see this in the Bhagavatam, that a lot of times we hear about Prahlad, Haridas Thakur, but a lot of times in, let's say, Sunday feasts, we don't hear about prostitutes. Just because they're prostitutes, does that mean they're not great? No, in the Bhagavatam, in Canto 1, chapter 11, I believe verse 19, there's a whole list where Prabhupada's glorifying prostitutes, because the prostitutes, when Lord Krishna was leaving Dwarka, the prostitutes came out, and in that whole purport, Prabhupada is glorifying prostitutes because one is a prostitute. One, it can still be a pure devotee, he actually mentions. I don't know if I got the... So my question is, related to this ideology that just because one is celibate, just like Durvasamona, he was celibate, but he was also going to be a murderer. He was going to kill. So what is the use of one's greatness or celibacy? So how do we give up this tendency that if one is chaste, one is great, if one is celibate, if, like you mentioned, this pride comes. If you know the sastras, you're considered great. If you don't, you're not great. So, and a lot of times I feel like we beat ourselves up because that's the general tendency in society. We see that prostitutes are looked down on, people who are poor are looked down on, but we can see that there's all types of devotees, even prostitutes. So how to get with this notion, because we hear a lot of classes about that these great devotees, but generally speaking, we don't hear about the prostitutes. And there's probably a reason for that. So can you elaborate on how not to get down on ourselves? Because that's a lot of tendencies that when we make mistakes, we go into this depression because I'm not great and what to do about it. But everyone makes mistakes. But that doesn't mean you're not less great. We're great based on that we're part and parcel of Krishna. So mamai vanso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanas. So my question is how do we give this tendency of this strict ideology of what is greatness? So can you listen?
Well, it always come down to the same principle that we have to be always under the guidance of a tattvadarshi, someone who have an understanding of the absolute reality of reality. Like my spiritual master always says that, you know, we can go to all these different fluctuations. Sometimes we become bewildered. You simply have to be bring down back to spiritual reality. So it's almost, you know, you have to, he says sometimes you press the reset button and then go back to the position of spiritual reality. So that's what the devotees help us, our guides help us to always, you know, come back to the position of a spiritual reality. So at the end, you know, all these different perplexities and confusions of things, you know, maybe this person is this mistake is that, and then we always go back to the spiritual connection and reality. So Krishna says that he says that even if one commits the most abominable of the mistakes, still if you remain fixed in the process, then you should still be considered sadhu. You're still in the position, in the right position, the rightful position, in this virtuous position. So for us, we're fully dependent. In front of my Guru Maharaj, I'm just a fool. Lord Chaitanya, you know, himself, he gave that example. In front of Spirit, murk, right? I'm a fool in front of my spiritual master. So, you know, fools are always making mistakes. But because I'm fixed in following the instructions of my spiritual master, then I'm in its virtuous position. I'm protected. So we have to embrace, we have to accept it, we have to embrace it. There's no alternative. In this world, there's only two things to be choose. You follow Krishna's way, or the highway. That's a good saying. Yeah, the highway is the highway to hell. And in that day, whatever that rock and roll song. I don't want to sing it. So either Krishna's way or that other thing. So we do Krishna's way. One more question. We are a little past time, but you know, was a lot of reading today. Yes, Shamasundar Jagannath Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for a nice class with instructions for many of us. In your lecture, you mentioned very briefly about Varnashram Dharma. And if you could just explain how far that is helpful towards extending your devotional service, or it has certain limitations. I mean, it takes you to a certain level and thereafter you got to get into a different league. About Varnashram Dharma.
Yeah, it's... Varnashram Dharma by itself is not sufficient. Like Lord Chaitanya says, you know, yeah, it's good, but it's still, you know, you have to go deeper. So we really have to go deep. And we can only go deep by the mercy of, you know, the representatives of Lord Chaitanya. So then we can understand how to properly perform our duties. Because at the end, the purpose of Varnashram Dharma is to allow us to fully be in the right position to receive Krishna Bhakti. The fact is, what is it? Dharmasya Parvargasya. That all these duties within the Varnashram Dharma, they're all meant for liberation. So they all have that capacity, but we have to understand how. So then we take the instructions and the guidance. So then, therefore, Prabhupada wanted to establish this, he said this Daivi Varnashram, which is Varnashram, but fully under the umbrella of bhakti. So, so much can be talked about it. I'm not very expert in that, but that much, you know, we can understand. All right, I'd like to stop here. It's a little past time. So thank you so much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.